Yay, you're here! I am pumped. There is just no other way to say it. So glad you're here. Have I got a story for you? This is about a man who almost wasn't vice president. Almost wasn't, but did become vice president while he was not even in the country. And then he was only vice president for a short period of time. You've got to hear this story. You're going to have some mind-blown brain tangle moments when you're listening to this. I'm chatting with my friend Abby Ayers. I just love her so much. You're going to get a kick out of listening to our conversation. Let's dive in. Let's do The Man Who Almost Wasn't Vice President. I'm Sharon McMahon, and welcome to the Sharon Says So podcast. This episode is brought to you by Olive and June, which is how I get salon-perfect nails from the comfort of my own house. All the best colors, all the best tools, all inside the Olive and June Manny system. Abby! Hello, my friend.
Heyo.
How are you? It's so nice join me. I've decided that I will be calling you Abigail.
Oh, good.
Abigail
Adams.
Like Abigail Adams.
Yes.
One of my favorite first ladies.
Oh, good.
So I invited you today because I have a story that I think you're going to be interested in.
I cannot even wait.
This is like up your alley.
Is it?
I think so. I think you're going to enjoy
it. I feel like this story is going to tell me a lot about what you think of me.
No, there's nothing unflattering about you in it.
I love it.
First of all, let me just ask you a couple questions.
Okay.
Do you know who William Rufus King is?
No.
Okay.
I hardly know. Like, I don't know 5 presidents off the top of my head. Like, I did not do well in school. Like, I'm street smart, but like, no.
Oh yeah.
You straight as a teacher. Streets. Yeah, like as a teacher, you probably would have been like, let's put you like in the corner. Cause I would just talk to people. Yeah. No. I would have been your best friend, but I definitely would have gotten a hard C, probably a D.
So I also think it's funny that you think that you have street smarts.
You've got to have one or the other. Maybe I don't have either.
He's like, no. Live in Utah.
Yeah, I'm in Utah. I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, the least streety place in the world.
No. Okay, so.
I can't even wait.
William Rufus King, born in the late 1700s, born into a wealthy family, becomes an attorney. And of course, during that time frame, there was no law school, right? You just apprenticed with other lawyers. And
okay.
When they figured out that you had learned enough, then you could take the bar exam and you could become an attorney yourself. He becomes an attorney and he quickly, because of his family connections, he quickly gets elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. When he was 24 years old, he finally takes the oath of office after he turns 25, because the Constitution says you have to be 25 in order to be a U.S. representative.
Okay.
So after a period of time, he resigned being a member of Congress so that he could go to Russia to work for the U.S. minister to Russia. Back then, of course, you didn't just have satellite connections where you could just like, you know,
yeah, we're in the 1700s.
Right. So he resigns Congress, goes to Russia. And while he's in Russia, he starts getting word that like things are starting to pop in the American South. Like, you might want to buy some land down here because it's going to soon, these regions are going to become states. You might want to move here. It seems real great. So he's
getting this information from Russia. Like, he's living his dream life in Russia.
He's working.
And then through the grapevine, he's like,
he hears this
Louisiana.
Yeah. Through the grapevine,
okay.
He gets a letter saying, I just bought like a big plantation down here. You might want to buy a big plantation down here before all the big plantations get bought up. So these are undeveloped area.
Okay.
So he buys a large plot of land. And he returns to the United States, in like 1818 after having worked in Russia for a couple of years. He, again, comes from money, has made money for himself, begins to acquire slaves. And eventually, over the course of his trajectory of his career, had acquired over 500 slaves, was one of the largest slave owners in the area. From the time the Constitution was written until the early 1900s, Abby, people did not get to vote for their own senator. Senators were chosen by the state government.
Like appointed.
They were elected by the state legislature.
Oh, okay.
And until the early 1900s, when we changed the law to allow senators to be directly elected by the population. Okay. So he becomes very wealthy and well-known and is elected to the U.S. Senate and goes to become a senator. And of course, still had his giant plantation. He just wasn't living there full time because he becomes a senator. And he, to this day, is one of the longest serving senators. He was in the Senate for almost 29 years. So he's been in the Senate. He was in the Senate from 1819 to 1844. Okay. A couple of other little interesting tidbits about gentleman is that he never married. He never married a woman. He lived with a man for 13 years. That man's name was James Buchanan. James Buchanan later went on to become the president of the United States.
Okay. That name I knew. Shockingly. Yep. I know.
Yep. there has been 150 plus years of speculation about the relationship between King and Buchanan. Okay. People who knew them at the time referred to them as Miss Nancy and Aunt Fancy.
Are you kidding?
That was what people called them during that time period.
I love this. Oh my gosh.
So
I cannot imagine this. Like, yeah. This is, in today's world, this is so turned, like, a gay man owning a plantation. Like,
so some people have said they just had a really close friendship. The rules of friendship at the time were different than they are today. And men often had very close relationships in ways that are socially unacceptable today. Yes. Some people have said that those nicknames of like Miss Nancy and Aunt Fancy, that those were nicknames that people called others who just like had manners and wore clean clothes. So again, we don't have any like, and this is my life partner. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, it's just
that
like
kind of evidence, but yet there's been a lot of speculation. Let's just say that. Okay. So in the Constitution, there are really only two jobs that it talks about that are in relationship to Congress. So when you hear about somebody who's like, oh, they're the Senate majority leader, they're the, you know, House minority leader, like you hear about all that kind of stuff. None of that is in the Constitution. Those are all jobs that Congress has invented for itself in an effort to make things run more smoothly. But there are two jobs that are mentioned in the Constitution for Congress, and one of them is the Speaker of the House, and the other is the President pro tempore of the Senate. And what the President pro tempore does
is... That sounds like tempura shrimp.
Yes. Like, the President is pro tempura shrimp. Yes.
Absolutely.
Now you will remember that name. So the job of the President pro tempore is essentially to stand in, act as the president of the Senate. The Constitution also talks about how the vice president of the United States is supposed to do things like break ties in the Senate, things along those lines. And so they are essentially acting like the vice president would if the vice president was there in the Senate, to just like make sure that things are running the way they're supposed to run.
Yes.
And everybody's that doing what they're supposed to do.
Like a tempura shrimp job. Like, let me, like, babysitter.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, yeah.
Just kind of in charge. It's a big deal. It's a big deal to be the president pro tempore. It's a big deal you're fourth in the line of succession as the president pro tempore. So president, vice president, speaker of the house, president pro tempore. So it's a big deal to be essentially the head of the Senate. Have you heard of President Zachary Taylor? Do you remember him? Okay, so
do you think I know?
No,
I thought I cleared that up in the beginning.
But then you knew about James Buchanan, so
I don't even know. I know some. Okay. But
sorry,
no.
You don't need to know anything. You need to know nothing. I'm going to tell you what you need to know. So
good.
Zachary Taylor, you know, like he had been this big kind of war hero. He is in office for 16 months and he attends this big gathering, this big party at the Washington Monument. And he eats a couple of big bowls of cherries. This is in July. Okay.
Okay. I thought you literally were going to say tempura shrimp.
No. Zachary Taylor eats a bunch of cherries. He drinks a couple of glasses of iced milk.
Wow.
And then goes back to the White House and starts not feeling too good. And he starts having some very serious digestive problems. Kind of like coming out both ends. He drinks some water to try to feel better. Within a few days, he was dead. Literally, just like a few days, the president died. The president died from eating some cherries and drinking some milk.
Iced milk. I was thinking like, why does she know this? Like, how does she know this? Okay, then he dies. Like, that escalated quickly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he was dead within a few days.
Note to self, no drinking milk and eating cherries.
Well, they hypothesize. I mean, it's hard to know. Of course, this is 1850. So obviously medicine was very different then than it is now. Yes. Some people think that he died of, you know, like from a bacterial infection, bacteria that was in either the milk or the water that he consumed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other people think he got gastroenteritis, like an intestinal infection from the combination of eating cherries and drinking this and kind of potentially infected milk. those kinds of infections were very prominent in that region during that time.
Okay.
Right? Like we didn't have refrigeration.
So he dies.
He dies. And he died 16 months after becoming the president, right? Like it's unusual for a president to die that quickly, even during the 1800s. And for him to have his death so strongly associated with eating cherries and drinking milk, it was so unexpected because he wasn't known to be like a sickly man that just shows.
Seems suspicious, right?
You know what? I used to go to the nail salon and pay a lot of money, sit at my appointment, watch as they've essentially ruined the integrity of my nails from all of the tools they use to remove the previous gel polish. And I got tired of it. And then I became super lazy and did absolutely nothing with my nails for probably a couple of years. And then that changed when I found Olive & June. I was always terrible at painting my own nails. It looked like a 5-year-old did it. And so once I discovered their Manny system, the tools they offer, the most gorgeous colors, and then the tutorials to teach you how to use it all, now I have salon perfect nails at home without having to schedule the appointments and without the damage to my nails. So if you want salon perfect nails, you can go to oliveandjune.com, put their Manny system in your cart, and use Sharon20 for 20% off at checkout. Hey friends, it's Sharon again. Did you know that I teach online workshops? 'Cause I do. They are called Government for Grownups, and they are a fun, fact-based, nonpartisan way to get more information about how things work in the United States, hot topics on things like abortion and gun control, not promoting a certain viewpoint, just providing you with education so you can make your own educated opinion on important matters. They are really affordable. I charge like $10 for a live class, and it is well worth it. So you can head to SharonMcMahon.com and click on workshops. Okay, so Millard Fillmore, who was the vice president at the time, quickly has to become the president because Zachary Taylor is dead 16 months after getting elected. So during that time, this is not true anymore, but during that time, we had no way to fill the seat of vice president. If something happened to the president and the vice president had to become the president, or if the vice president died, the seat of vice president was just left open. They did nothing about it. Now we have a method to replace the vice president.
They're like, we should probably fix that.
We should probably, like, it's actually a national security issue to have no presidential backup.
Yeah.
Right? Right? What, like, that's a bad idea. Dang. So 1851, a man who is new to this story named Franklin Pierce gets nominated to be the president of the United States. We're moving past Fillmore and all of that kind of stuff. We're moving ahead to 1851. Yes. Franklin Pierce gets nominated to be the president. And William Rufus King was nominated to be the vice president. You know, the system is not the same as it is now, where you have a candidate who says, I'm running for president and this person is my vice presidential pick. At the time, parties selected the tickets for themselves and they decided mm-hmm. who's going to be our presidential nominee and who's going to be our vice presidential nominee. That was done at the actual conventions. So this was decided at the Democratic Convention, which was held in Baltimore in 1851.
Okay? I kind of like that actually.
Yeah, that it's a third party, yeah. like other groups of people are making these decisions yes. about who would be good at this job. I get it.
Yes.
Yeah. Franklin Pierce and William Rufus King win the election. So King is going to become the vice president. Pierce is going to become the president. All through this campaign period, by the way, campaign periods did not last 2.5 years like they do now.
Yeah.
You know, where yeah. it's like, how long is this going to take? It was much shorter.
There weren't 50 states either.
That's true. True. Very true.
They weren't going out to California.
That's right. No. That's right. So late in 1852, after the election had been won, King starts getting sicker and sicker and sicker.
No.
He had experienced some sickness during the campaign. And by mid-December, like December 20th, King decides to resign his seat in the Senate so that he can really focus on his own health and getting well before he becomes the vice president.
So when did he become, like, when is it the same now where it's like you start, like, when do you start becoming the vice president
or
the
president? March.
So same. Okay.
No, it used to be March and we have moved it to January now.
Oh, okay.
So it used to be, yep. It used like to be
the same. No,
it's the same. It's the same. March and January are the same.
It's the same. It's the next year though. Okay. So they get elected and then.
He left office, left his Senate seat on December 20th and he had tuberculosis. King did. And his doctor at the time was like, you know what you don't need is to stay here in damp, crowded Washington, D.C. with your tuberculosis.
Yeah.
What you should do is go to Cuba. That's what you should do. not go wear a to mask. Your plantation.
Go to Cuba. Okay.
Yeah, don't go to your plantation. Go to Cuba. Okay. So he, on advice of his doctor, decides, okay, I'm going to go to Cuba, where hopefully I will be able to recover enough to assume the vice presidency at the beginning of March. In early January, so this is the interim period before Franklin Pierce and William Rufus King assume their roles in the White House.
Okay.
In January, Franklin Pierce was attending a funeral. Pierce was from New Hampshire. He was pro-slavery, but he was from the North, and he was attending a funeral in Massachusetts. Quick little backstory about Franklin Pierce and his wife. They had 3 sons. Their first son, Franklin Pierce Jr., died a few days after he was born. Their second son, who they named Frank, died when he was 4 from an illness. They had one son left named Benny. So Pierce and his wife and their son were leaving Massachusetts to go back to New Hampshire, leaving a funeral. Shortly after they boarded the train to return home, an axle on the train broke. And the train fell off of the tracks and tumbled down a 20-foot embankment.
No.
And Franklin Pierce's son, Benny, was decapitated and died. And so this...
I'm legit going to start crying. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
I cannot. All three
of your sons... being gone. Killed and your son being killed in such a dramatic accidental fashion in front of your eyes, a couple of months before you're supposed to become the president of the United States. King is sick with tuberculosis in Cuba and Pierce's son was just killed in a freight train accident. So he considered do I even go ahead with this? Finally, the Pierces get to Washington, D.C. This is March 4th. Meanwhile, King is too sick. Too sick to come back to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration. Congress, hearing from King, like, I don't know if I can make it. I'm real sick. They decide a couple of days before the inauguration, okay, let's pass a special resolution that will allow King to be sworn in as vice president while he's in Cuba. And again, bear in mind, this is the early 1850s. They can't just be like, hey, yep, let's just call him and be like, sure, we'll swear you in. How do they get a message to him? They have to send it, like send it, maybe a
boat, physical piece of paper. Or
somebody needs to transmit the message to him. So it takes a while to get these kind of messages. So they decide March 2nd, okay, we're going to let King get sworn in down there in Cuba. Pierce over here, like is he even going to make it? I don't know. So he finally makes it to Washington, D.C. His wife was so distraught that she could not attend his inauguration. No. He felt that God was punishing him for something, which is why all three of his children died. And he refused to take the oath of office on the Bible. Like he refused to put his hand on the Bible.
Yeah. And he's like, no.
Because he felt like God was punishing him. It was not until March 24th that they finally swore in William Rufus King as vice president. So
the message got delayed on the boat coming over. Yeah,
it took a while.
Just a minute. It took
a while. Yes. So we had a president on March 4th, 3 weeks later, they finally swear William Rufus King in as vice president. And he's like, well, I'm the vice president. I should probably try to return to the country that I am the vice president of. Right? Like that might be handy. But while he was being sworn in, he was too weak to even stand up to take the oath of office.
Oh my gosh. He's
literally just like lying in bed. 2 weeks after he becomes the vice president, he finally is like, okay, I'm going to try to make it back to the United States. He leaves Cuba on April 6th. He left Cuba. This is how long it took to get back to his house. It took from April 6th to April 17th to get back to his house.
That's actually shorter than I thought, honestly.
People flew to Florida from Cuba on a raft. Like, why is it taking weeks?
Like, it's because I live in Utah, so I'm like, for me to get home from Cuba with like
would take you this that is long.
Like, yeah, it would take way longer, but you could float to Cuba on a raft.
So he finally arrived home on April 17th and then he died the next day. His office is left vacant. Franklin Pierce has no vice president for the remainder of his time. Franklin Pierce developed a very serious drinking problem. His wife had very serious depression for his entire presidency. Mm. When he tried to run again to become the president.
Wait, why would he even try?
The opposition to Pierce was very strong. And the slogan that was used was like, anyone but Pierce. Literally, anyone but Pierce. And
his kids die. And then everyone's like, no, you're a loser.
Anyone but you. And guess who became president after Pierce left office?
Buchanan.
James Buchanan.
Yes.
James Buchanan became president.
Was he depressed because of Rufus?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I want to know.
So Buchanan never married. Pierce later died just a few years later after leaving office from cirrhosis of the liver. He literally drank himself to death. Here's the last little tidbit of this story. Where William Rufus King purchased his plantation and where he enslaved hundreds and hundreds of people was in Selma, Alabama. He founded the city of Selma, Alabama. He was one of the co-founders of the city of Selma, which of course, a little less than 100 years later, Martin Luther King led the Selma marches, where they were marching from Selma to try to get voting rights for everyone. And Lyndon Johnson was president at that time. And Lyndon Johnson eventually signed the Voting Rights Act during that time period. But that started in the city, that William Rufus King, the plantation owner, founded. Well, only vice president for a few weeks and was vice president in the United States for one day.
No, not even a day.
Not even a whole day.
Okay, so I want to know what your thoughts are on him. Like, what do you feel like? Because I'm going back and forth between like, oh my gosh, I feel so sorry for him. And then I'm like, oh yeah, he owned slaves and stuff. Like,
yeah.
No, okay, so, I don't feel bad for him. You got what was right. coming to him. Like, right. what do you do? Like,
that's a great question. And I think that is the question that people, modern students of history, modern historians wrestle with. That is the yes. question. How do we make sense of the fact that so many of our predecessors for so many years owned human beings? How do we tease out their contributions to America and also reconcile the idea that they did something that is morally reprehensible to us today? How do we reconcile the idea that George Washington, Thomas Jefferson were very, very wealthy, large plantation owners, owned hundreds and hundreds of slaves? And sometimes even in the case of George Washington, he later expressed his like, I don't know if this is the right thing to do, but their loyalty was to the Union. Their loyalty was to keep the institution alive. Today, it seems like there should be no choice. Today, the choice is don't do that. Isn't that like kind of the prevailing sentiment?
Yes.
Give up your trappings of wealth to do the right thing. That's our current perspective.
Yeah.
And so I totally get where you're coming from. And I don't have a magic formula to say, here's how we separate the good that somebody did from the bad that somebody did. We have a natural tendency to categorize people into good and bad. We do have that yes. natural tendency because it's easier for our brains to make sense of them. If we can be like, yes. these are the, you know, like the Allies in World War II were the good guys. Hitler was the best,
yes.
right? Like yes. it's, we want to be able to categorize people into those two camps. And in reality, humans are much more complicated than that. And I don't think it serves us to just categorize people as good guys and bad guys. It helps yeah. us to look at the totality of the picture of who they were. We can absolutely say that Hitler did nothing worth saving. Like, we're not going to be like, here's all the good things Hitler did. Nope. There's none of that. You know what I mean?
No.
But I do think we absolutely have to be honest about what has happened in history. We have to be honest, look at the totality of somebody's contribution, determine what the positives of their contribution were. We can't pretend that George Washington did nothing good. You know, like this, right? We can't pretend he didn't win the Revolutionary War. We can't pretend he did nothing positive, but yet we also can't pretend that he did nothing bad. We can't move forward if we're going to just pretend that Americans have always gotten along and done the right thing. We have to continue to work for progress.
I love it.
Yes.
I love this story. I love talking to you. Could talk all day. It's fine.
We really could. Thank you so much.
I love that you asked me to do this.
Yes.
Seriously.
Tell everybody where they can find you on Instagram.
Okay. So my handle, it's Abby Ayres.
Spell it.
Abby Ayres. Abiayres.
Yes. Yep. You have to go
on Instagram.
And follow her and watch her stories about Carol for president. You will
die
of laughter. And she's just an absolute, I don't even talk about you in the third person. You are just a delight.
I love you.
Yes.
Okay.
Aww, thank you so much.
I love the Rufus story. Yes.
Yay, Rufus. Rufy. The frat boy who everything was handed to.
Frat boy.
That's your
Russia,
takeaway.
Russia, Cuba, whatever.
Shrimp tempura. The end. Okay. Shrimp tempura, the end. Thank you so much for listening to the Sharon Says So podcast. I am truly grateful for you. And I'm wondering if you could do me a quick favor. Would you be willing to follow or subscribe to this podcast, or maybe leave me a rating or a review? Or if you're feeling extra generous, would you share this episode on your Instagram stories or with a friend? All of those things help podcasters out so much. I cannot wait to have another mind-blown moment with you next episode. Thanks again for listening to the Sharon Says So podcast.